Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 1027.
Well, it's time now to turn to the world of electric vehicles. As we see, the number of electric and plug-in hybrid cars on the world rose exceeded 3 million last year, which was a 54% jump compared with 2016. Just to give you an idea of the global growth that we're seeing in electric vehicles. And Michael Jordan tweeted a couple of days ago that only the uninformed are buying new petrol or diesel cars now. And to continue his tweet, he said, in 4 years' time, the market will collapse when people realize how cheap the total cost of ownership of electric cars is. Electric kilometers are already a fraction of petrol costs. So it got me thinking, what is the state of the electric vehicle market currently in South Africa? We've got a few marks on the road, but there's all kinds of questions around the infrastructure. What are some of the barriers? How are we faring with charging stations? And how close are we to mainstream adoption? Is it actually 4 years away? Well, I'm joined now by Viv Govender, wealth manager at Rand Swiss, and as an asset manager, someone who follows these trends quite closely. Viv, good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
Alan Boyd, BMWi's product manager. Alan, would you be sponsoring Kevin on the back of that victory?
Well, we can talk later.
Great to have you join us tonight.
Thank you.
And Winston Jordan, owner and CEO of Grid Cars, and we'll talk exactly what Grid Cars is all about in a little while. Winston, thanks for joining us.
Lovely to be here. Thanks.
Now, Alan, as far as I'm aware, there are only three fully electric vehicles for sale on the market. We've got the BMW i3 and the i8, and we've got the Nissan Leaf. We have had various other manufacturers stating that they're going to be introducing cars into the market. But just give us an overview of the electric vehicle market currently in South Africa.
So currently we have full electric vehicles. So we need to define between plug-in hybrid electric cars and full electric cars. So currently that is running on the road in South Africa. It's the i3s, BMW i3s, and then the Nissan Leaf. The i8 is a plug-in hybrid electric car.
Ah.
So those are the two main full electric vehicles that are available in South Africa.
And when you look at the market, that Leaf was hoped, let me rephrase that. When the Leaf was first introduced, there was a lot of hype and excitement that electric vehicles were going to disrupt and displace petrol vehicles at the entry level. The costs were coming down, but perhaps we haven't seen the market develop as quickly as the initial hype had suggested. What have been some of the challenges in developing the entire electric vehicle ecosystem?
I think the main one right now would be the amount of OEMs offering EVs in this country. Right now you've got two, which is not enough to stimulate the complete market. We have other challenges that that we over time will get through, one of them being charging infrastructure, which is always the first point that a lot of people bring up.
And Winston, Grid Cars is really involved in this in particular. You were established back in 2009 as a services company in the electric vehicle industry, and a lot of your formation was guided by support from the Eskom EV program, groups like Senedi and the Innovation Hub, and you're based there near the CSIR, which is the perfect place to be. When it comes to things like charging station infrastructure, the equipment to service that, how far down the road are we in developing that that broader infrastructure that will enable the wider adoption of electric vehicles?
So as Grid Cars, we've got the products that we've developed locally in South Africa, especially on the AC charging systems. But that said, there's at least five or six other companies that are that have got very strong presence within the market and certainly rolling out the technology. You know, we talk about saying, oh, there might not be enough infrastructure. To date, there's about 100 publicly active charge points. If you look at the number of vehicles, it probably puts the average at about 4 vehicles per charge point. Whereas if you look at any of the overseas countries, they're about 20 vehicles per charge point. So we're actually in quite a good space. Yes, they are relatively far apart, but if you're driving around any of the major centers, Cape Town, Johannesburg, Pretoria, you're probably never more than a few kilometers, 5, maybe 10 kilometers away from the nearest charge point. I think what happens is often people don't know what it looks like, because a charge point is not like a like a normal fossil fuel garage, you know, where it's on the corner, it's got big lights, it's very visible. They're relatively obscure devices standing there. It looks almost like a parking meter. So if you don't know what you're looking for, then you're not going to recognize it. But that said, yes, we have to roll out more infrastructure. We've got to reach further distances. We've got to get along on the highways. We've got to make sure that we've got fast charging capabilities at all destinations or major destinations, so that people are able to move a little bit more freely with their vehicles.
Fast charging is one of those issues. But from a municipal planning perspective, I recall chatting to Mary Hoare of the City of Cape Town's planning department last year. They seem to be quite far advanced in analyzing the impact of electric vehicles on electricity consumption, for example. So you drive into work, you plug it in at an office building, what impact that's going to have on the grid. So the regulators, the policymakers, are really thinking long and hard about this. Viv, from your perspective as an asset manager looking at who might be the winners and losers in this space, what do you see as some of the key challenges and potential barriers to large-scale adoption of EV in South Africa?
I think there's three main areas. I mean, of course, number one is the cost, and we need to discuss like what exactly the electric vehicle is so expensive. Is it the battery? Is it the motors? Is it the what about it makes it's so expensive compared to like a cheap, let us say, petrol car or diesel car. The second thing is, of course, South Africa is a big country, so you need to basically have a car that can do a trip from Durban to Cape Town, or you know, one of those like, you know, 500-600k trips. And the last thing, of course, is like has been mentioned before, you know, charging speed. I mean, it's one thing to go from like Durban to Cape Town, but if you have to stop in halfway through and wait a day for the car to charge up, doesn't really make it feasible. So I think those are the things. It's the charging frequency, it's the range, and it's the cost.
So looking at those things, what sort of range are we getting typically, Alan, and how long does it take to recharge?
So our current i3 is a 94 amp hour battery. That would give you a customer range of about 200 kilometers. Obviously, depending on how you drive it, but a customer range of 200Ks. The time to charge it from a DC fast charger would be around 45 minutes.
And that's great for city commuting. I think most people would live within 50 to 60 kilometers of their place of work, so that's perfect for to the office and back. For those longer trips, though, it still presents something of a challenge to adoption.
Yeah, absolutely. But with the fast speed of battery technology increasing, we've already got plans to change batteries, obviously, in our electric vehicles. And that would slowly increase the range. The Teslas of the world already have 400-500K range, but we will get to that. And not too long around the corner, we will have vehicles from BMW that can do the 400-500K range.
Not too long around the corner. Do you see it in 4 years' time, as per Michael Jordan's rather optimistic?
We see it in around 2020, 2021, so sooner than the 4 years.
Well, even sooner than
that? Yeah, absolutely.
Winston, do you think Michael Jordan was on point with his tweet the other day that we're going to start seeing that tipping point around about that 2021 era?
I think internationally, absolutely. South Africa will be a little bit behind that curve. But, you know, with these sort of technologies, you just don't know. I think the biggest challenge we will face in the future is whether the automotive industry can supply, because I think the customer is going to pivot faster than what the supply can be met in terms of manufacturing and changing the technology. So it's going to be an interesting time over the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years, but certainly that pivot will come. There are other OEMs which will have vehicles in South Africa within the next year that are going to also be doing decent ranges. So we're looking at probably 4, maybe 5 in total OEMs with electric vehicles in South Africa before the middle of next year. And I think that's going to start to really change that landscape, because it's going to, you know, people are going to see that it's not just a few people that are thinking this technology may go. It's actually everybody committing to it now in a very, very serious way. And as we see those commitments, I think we'll see a change in people's understanding of the technology, and maybe not even just embracing the technology, because the technology is there and it's really worth it.
And it also makes, from an investment perspective, for a very interesting conversation around who are going to be the winners, who are going to be the losers in this space. Everyone looks at Tesla and whether or not it can produce 5,000, I think, Model S's in a quarter. When you're looking at the BMWs of this world and the VWs and the bigger marks, they know how to manufacture at large scale. And you've said to me in the past that if you were to make a bet on a Tesla or one of those, you'd go with one of the industry incumbents. How do you see the automakers morphing and adapting in this environment? Because if you look at it, they might have to morph into low margin, high volume assemblers of EV, almost autonomous vehicles, which we haven't even got to, but that seems to be the next step.
Yes, I mean, when autonomous vehicles come into play, it'll be a society changing event, like cars replacing horses. It'll be something that the world doesn't look the same 10 years after it happens as it did before. You go to a place, you know, when the horses, 10 years before cars came around, and then 10 years after, it was a very different city environment, very different society even, than when that happens. So that's going to be something to be looked at. I personally believe that when you have autonomous driving happening, that the car becomes a very different kind of instrument than it was in the past, more commodified, much cheaper, less prestigious. I mean, nowadays, one of the things that you show off with is your car. You
know, especially in South Africa.
You'll have a BMW and be living in a rental, like, you know, one bedroom flat somewhere. Of course, it's the right choice to make.
Free plug for you there, Alan. Yeah. But we do have a culture in South Africa of petrol heads. We do like our cars, and that's why it's often been put to me that you'd look at a motor car and it's a very efficient use of one of the biggest purchases, biggest assets you're going to make in your life. You probably use it. It's utilized about 95%, 5% of the time. The other 95% of the time, it's in a garage, it's in a basement. It's not very efficient usage. So what we might move to is not car ownership, but with autonomous vehicles, rather ride sharing and a more utility type approach to the motor vehicle. Do you see that happening?
Yes, most certainly. And it takes away things that are a bane to society at the moment, or to modern life, like parking. So basically, you take a vehicle to town, you drop off the vehicle, or the vehicle drops you off, and the vehicle goes and picks someone else up, not having to park in town, not having to, you know, take up that space, etc. So it becomes a very, very, you know, advantageous thing from that point of view. However, when it comes to the autonomous vehicles, of course, there's a danger aspect, you know, the stuff. But once it does become a working model, you know, it becomes so advantageous. It just becomes a no-brainer. But getting back to, like, the local, you know, production of these cars and also the local consumption of these vehicles, I mean, also we need to discuss the cost as well. Why are electric vehicles expensive? What makes them expensive? Is the battery? And also, when it comes to the battery, like, you know, what's the lifespan? We see 500 Ks. Is it for a new battery? You know, with a cell phone, the first day it lasts a day, second year it lasts, you know, an hour. But what's the wear? What's the lifespan of these things? How are you going to basically get the consumer? I mean, obviously, there's a major advantage, but this is a new technology. So with the advantages come some changes in what you expect your vehicle to be able to do. What should a consumer expect an electric vehicle to not be able to do as well as a diesel or a petrol vehicle?
Winston?
Well, I'd like to say there's very little that they can't do as well. You know, if you look at it, it's more efficient, it's lighter, there's less parts, it's going to be more reliable, lower maintenance, lower fuel cost. Everything you look at will beat any sort of fossil fuel vehicle. So I think one of the biggest cost drivers, and I think Alan will be in a better position to give the final answer to this, but it's just that it's just a total volume game. It's not about the battery or about the motor or about this. It's new technology, it's new techniques, they're using new materials, everything is new, and it's really just getting the volume into that game and getting the experience to be able to bring those prices down. So unfortunately, there is a period we're going to have to go through where the more the electric vehicles in the market will be, the more a higher class, the higher brands, the brands that can take a little bit more of a price premium, and the customer is still going to be looking, saying, no, I'm quite happy with that. So that's my view on where I think the pricing thing is. Yes, batteries will come down, and we will see that change as well in terms of the cost of the vehicles. What that timeline is, certainly 4 or 5 years, I think we'll see a big change in the battery prices. So I think it'll be an interesting market at that stage.
Alan?
Economy of scale has to be part of it, like Winston has just said. I just wanted to make a comment on range, and this is a practical example. I've got a customer that has a i3 right now, and he's done over 160,000 Ks on his i3, and his battery capacity is still over 80%. So that is practical, everyday use that he uses the car for.
And all the research that I've read says that it is going to be about cost per mile or cost per kilometre coming. That's the key metric you're going to look at in transportation. And when it comes to EVs, because they have this extended life, less moving parts, new materials, all of that, the average range here is around 500,000 miles. That's over a million kilometres. That's a lot of miles. It's going to cost 70% less to fuel and 80% less to maintain. So everything is pointing towards the market heading in that direction. It is about reaching that convergence. And I suppose that's where it's sometimes a little bit difficult to forecast when that moment in time is going to happen. Viv, if you were to advise someone who's perhaps looking for a new petrol or diesel vehicle now, would you be advising them to wait 4 years?
I think right now in South Africa, the common sense assumption would be you'd wait, you'd buy a new vehicle, a petrol or diesel vehicle right now, especially if you're going to do your trips back to like your home, you know, especially if it's like a few hundred Ks outside your where you normally live, etc. That might not have the facilities that, you know, that are available in the larger city centers. But that being said, I mean, think back, what was it, like 11 years ago that the Apple One, the iPhone One came out? I mean, and people hadn't thought that it's going to be. I mean, if you went back, you know, 20 years ago and says landlines are basically a dying technology, no one would have believed you. Or you said TV is a dying technology, nobody would have believed you. This is stuff that the world changes so fast and in ways that are so, you know, unexpected that it is shocking at the moment. I mean, we're living not just in a fast-changing world, in a faster-changing world.
In a faster-changing world, in a country that has its known grid issues, thanks to Eskom, and we're currently going through another phase of union-induced load shedding at the moment. So thankfully, we haven't had too much to deal with over the last week. What sort of grid constraints might be a challenge or an issue here, Winston?
I don't see massive constraints when it comes to this. And I'll tell you, there's many ways that we look at it. So I'm certainly not an Eskom, and I'm not looking down at that day-to-day detail of it. But, you know, as we expand the network, it's not that we take in megawatts on the physical network at this stage. It's kilowatt systems. And if you look at the growth projections that we're talking about, Eskom themselves, years ago, said that there's sufficient spare capacity overnight, not in any other time, just overnight, to fully charge a million EVs. Now, we're not even close to that. We're probably 10 years before we could even, you know, optimistically see those sort of numbers.
Right.
And the network could have evolved so much more by then. So I think that the growth thing, you know, it's not a step change. And I think that's where there's a lot of fear. When we talk about, oh, they're using electricity, oh, it's a step change, we're going to lose. And we're not. It's going to be a very progressive change. And that progressive change, we will easily be able to respond to, and we'll be easily be able to manage and grow that.
And within that, back to how cities are thinking about planning for this, if you are charging overnight, then driving your EV into work in the morning, most of our CBDs have bright sunshine during the day. We are fortunate. We're blessed, much like England has actually been blessed with a bit of sunshine and a good football team. Who knows? and a dysfunctional government. So they're really becoming a periphery country right now. But what we have at the moment is the ability to substitute that with rooftop solar during the day. So it really looks like the grid constraint is not really an issue at all, Alan. And to put it another way, what do we need to see in terms of consumer adoption for this to start hitting that mainstream curve and uptake? How many more marks do we need to see in South Africa offering models before we start to see critical mass?
For me, it's difficult to say that. However, what is critical is the variance between pricing. So we're at the upper end of pricing of EVs, but we need a more spanned offering into the South African market to grow it. Once it starts to grow, I think the momentum will take its own lead down the road.
It's a bit of a chicken and egg scenario, though, that we're painting, because we need the volumes and the economies of scale to bring the price down. But in order to get the volumes up, we need to see low-priced entrants come into the market. So, Viv, how do we get around that?
And I think, of course, the big elephant in the room is Tesla when it comes to the EV market. And, of course, their approach has been, you know, build the expensive cars to build the slightly less expensive cars to build the cheap cars eventually. And that's been the idea behind them, getting the technology improved on the more expensive cards with a premium, and that brings things through. We've got to see some kind of feed-through coming through from the high-end, you know, tourist manufacturers out there that are feeding through in terms of technology development and then bring that technology to the cheaper models. But that being said, with technology, understand that the best phone available 5 years ago is like the entry-level smartphone available right now. So it is possible when your technology developed that it's able to expand to the mass market in a very short period of time. And that's something that I think that we have to see happening in the car industry. But that being said, I mean, we need to actually also see then if that's to happen, cooperation. I mean, the internal combustion engine wasn't patented. Like, you know, the people had variations, they all used it, and that came through. Of course, in the modern like world of patents that are much stronger and much more, you know, difficult to break, there needs to be some kind of licensing approach that goes across. Like, you know, we have the USB kind of cables, and one company may develop it, but every company can use it if they license it. And so companies out there must be motivated to develop or to share the technologies that they do develop and not just keep them for like a 20-year period until the patent wears out.
And Winston, I think in the space that you operate in, that interoperability must be quite key when it comes to things like charging stations and the like. How is that currently set and standardized?
So there's currently two standards that have been used in South Africa, at the DC level, the fast chargers, which is the what we call Shademo, the Japanese standard, and CCS. But if we really look at the current market, and I'm going to say current market meaning now and the foreseeable future that we can see, which is maybe a year or two ahead, and that is 95% of the market will be using just CCS as a standard. So that is by far the most dominant standard at this stage. And if we look at where I think it's going to go, I think that will become the main one. There was some debate around Type 1 or Type 2, and the only person using the Type 1 standard was Nissan, and they've now, on their new models, are bringing out the Type 2 standard. So from that perspective, I think that race is coming down. We were talking before the show, and we said one of the things we can do very clearly in this country is we do have a crystal ball. I'm stealing your words, sorry. And that crystal ball is other countries. And if we look at what's happened in other countries, their biggest thing is they've always said, you know, control those standards right up front. Don't try and do it reactively after the time. Mm. And I think that's something that we're starting to get right in South Africa, is to really understand how should we take this forward. When BMW first launched in South Africa, they looked and they said, right, how do we put the back-end systems together? And we sat down and we designed a system that really is world class. It's aligned with the best systems in the world. It was informed by the people from Europe that were saying, this is the things that worked, this is the things that didn't, and ultimately ended up with a really good system that we operate here in South Africa, which is sort of the back office for managing the billing side of things, availability of charging systems, and managing those networks. So I really think that we are able to look in that crystal ball and make some good decisions that'll allow us to possibly close the gap between us and other countries over the next few years.
Sometimes it pays to be a fast follower rather than a leader in certain industries, Alan. In terms of BMW's strategy, you really are staking your future on electric vehicles.
Yes, absolutely. If we have a look at last year, we sold over 100,000 electric vehicles and PHEVs, and we intend to increase that. So our vision and our goal is to change from ICE to EV. That's
ICE, for those who are not
sorry.
jargon acquainted,
is internal combustion engines, fossil fuel engines.
And this whole electric drivetrain vehicle revolution also has interesting implications, Viv, for our own PGM sector as well. I had to go there.
Oh, it's sad. But look, to a certain extent, the PGM model on the ICE, catalytic converters, basically, has to a certain extent diminished, because recycling and technology improvements basically means you could almost get two car worths of platinum from maybe one old car being recycled. So it was great while it lasted, but even if we basically had us continue with the whole internal combustion engine thing, I mean, with the fall of diesel, I mean, certain places in Europe are actually banning diesel. It's, you know, in the city areas, because of it's good for the environment on the large scale, it's bad for the environment on the small scale with particulates, etc., that affects asthma and so on. So I think we made a good bit of money on platinum, but it's we have got to look at jewelry perhaps now and look at other things when it comes to platinum. I think the catalytic converter, you know, might have just come and gone with that. But that being said, I mean, there are other commodities out there. I know we talked about lithium as a possible bottleneck going down the line. We need to understand, like, you know, with this, it's not going to be the final technology. The current battery technology will not be the final technology when it comes to batteries. I think we'll have more developments coming down the line, and we need to see where that goes to. And there are many things we make in South Africa besides platinum, and we just need to see what we can exploit with that as well.
Alan, do you think there's an opportunity for us with our automotive industry development program and the way government has subsidized the motor sector in particular, for us to try and position ourselves into those value chains of the future, be it battery manufacture or any other components linked to electric vehicles?
We have to. It's not a question. It's that we have to get on board and join, because it's worldwide now. It's not just South Africa or Africa.
Is that a conversation that you're currently having with DTI, for example, or government?
With DTI, there is many conversations going on. That is one of many.
One of many. Winston, a big opportunity here for us if we seize it and, yep, and take advantage of, yeah, of this wide open window.
I absolutely agree. I think, you know, it's not a choice that we have. We really have to get on board with it. You know, with all of these technologies, especially things like batteries, they'll eventually become extremely commoditized, which means that your shipping cost will kill the product. And therefore, you're going to have to localize that sort of manufacturing. And various other technologies used within the vehicles will have to have exactly the same. Maintenance of charging systems, you've got to have local expertise to maintain them. You can't be looking to have them supported out of Europe. You've got to have the technology locally. So we really do need to pursue that.
Well, it does sound like a wonderful opportunity to start developing new industries and to create much needed jobs in a country that is looking for every opportunity it can get at the moment. Very interesting getting an insight into where we are in the progression of our EV market. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Winston Jordan, owner and CEO of GridCars. Alan Boyd, product manager for the BMW i, and Viv Govender, wealth manager at Rand Swiss.
Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 1027.
Well, what a breathless show. And as we head into what hopefully will be a breathless semi-final, my money is on Croatia. Ooh, I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for that. But I think Luka Modric's army are going to cause a bit of an English choke. As Carolyn Stain settles in with classic cocktail hour. And that'll take you up to what promises to be that epic semi-final. Dobranoci. Next month.